Hello and welcome to the last part of this New Vision podcast series focusing on COVID-19, lockdown, security forces, brutality in Africa. Richard Wataya is my name. Antonio Guterres, the UN Secretary General, put it aptly when he, in an extract from a video message the UN shared in April, stated that
the threat is the virus, not people. The COVID-19 pandemic is a public health emergency, but it is far more. It is an economic crisis, a social crisis, and a human crisis that is fast becoming a human rights crisis. Today, I am releasing a report highlighting how human rights can and must guide COVID-19 response and recovery. The message is clear. People and their rights must be front and center. We see the disproportionate effects on certain communities, the rise of hate speech, the targeting of vulnerable groups, and the risk of heavy-handed security responses undermining the health response.
Guterres made a statement based on reports the UN had received that some security forces in some parts of the world were using excessive force to enforce their government's COVID-19 measures. In April as well, reports that Uganda security forces were complicit in using excessive force to enforce the COVID-19 measures had reached the international human rights advocacy and research-based NGO Human Rights Watch. In a write-up on their web page under the headline Respect Rights in COVID-19 Response, Human Rights Watch said Uganda security forces had beaten, shot, and arbitrarily detained people across the country. Incidents of brutality by security forces in Mitiana, Amuru, Kampala, Bududa were cited as examples. In his video message, Guterres rightly appealed to governments across the globe to respect human rights in their COVID-19 responses. But were all the international media stories of high-handed security forces responses in some African countries really true? Stories such as those covered by France 24 in April under the contentious headline Curfew Crackdowns in Several African Countries Kill More People Than COVID-19 and the July BBC website story about a situation in Uganda under the headline Uganda Where Security Forces May Be More Deadly Than the Coronavirus did not of course make for good reading, and their headlines were in many ways exaggerated and alarmist. News headlines that put a false construction on things or that stretch the truth as a bait to get people to read a story are not new in journalism, but in my estimation, they are never a good idea, especially if the stories are about Africa. In many ways, the negative stories, driven of course by the headlines, reinforce the negative stereotypes about Africa in the Western world. It's my contention that some Western media houses were keen on finding negative narratives about Africa during COVID-19 because predictions that the COVID-19 outbreak would devastate and overwhelm Africa's weak healthcare systems have not exactly come to pass. According to Johns Hopkins University's July updates, COVID-19 has killed more than 18,200 people in Africa. The insinuation, therefore, in the two headlines that curfew crackdowns in Africa or security forces in Uganda have killed more people than COVID-19 is just unconvincing. You could, however, put up the argument that since Uganda has only 9 fatalities from COVID-19 compared to the 12 deaths at the hands of the local defense unit forces or the LDUs, there's some credibility to the BBC story. Seasoned Ugandan lawyer Dan Waliemera weighs in.
I think if you looked at many African countries, you find that when the rules for enforcement of public health guidelines against COVID-19 were implemented, you find that even before any deaths occurred, you had many cases of police brutality that not only led to injuries of citizens of those countries, but also deaths. For example, if you look at Uganda, even before we had the first COVID-19 deaths, we had LDUs kill or brutally murder about 6 to 7 people who are going about their business, although allegedly in violation of the COVID-19 rules that have been putting in place. For example, for Uganda's case, you could state that to an extent, the brutality meted out to citizens is more dangerous than COVID-19.
The argument that some African presidents were using repressive measures during COVID to prolong their stay in power, like for instance Peter Mutharika, the former president of Malawi, were also not entirely convincing. Mutharika lost the election to Lazarus Chakwera, so that theory in many ways was debunked. Seasoned Ugandan human rights lawyer Nicholas Opiyo, however, does not think so. His argument is that while the imposition of restrictions to curb the spread of COVID-19 were perfectly legal in the context of elections and in an environment where the police are viewed as partisan, there are bound to be suspicions.
Restricting mass public gathering as a measure for preventing the spread of an infectious disease is perfectly legal. But in the context of elections, in a context in which the police is viewed as partisan, as repressive, any actions taken by that police force will always arouse suspicion, will always arouse accusation of being high-handed or having ulterior motives, especially given the fact that there appears to be selective application of these restrictions. Members of the ruling party organize and hold mass gatherings in complete disregard of the COVID-19 guidelines of social distancing, wearing a mask, or washing hands. Nothing happens to them, including the Minister of Health, who herself signed these guidelines. But if anybody who is viewed as a political opposition organizes a similar meeting, they are met with brutal force. Thus, the selective application of these COVID guidelines in a period of election clearly points to a plausible suspicion of biased conduct, of a hidden motive by the authorities to restrict the space for operation of political parties in election while allowing ruling party candidates to have a free reign. That unfairness itself is what will undo all the good work, the good intention in putting in place these guidelines, and give rise to suspicion of ulterior motives, of using COVID to set a political score.
It's an argument that fellow lawyer Waliyemera concurs with.
Those who are emphasizing the issue of mass gatherings have some other issues. And indeed, it is true, the politicians may be using it as an excuse to achieve their own opportunistic goals. In my view, in my humble view, I know is that politicians are using it, especially those who are headed into elections, they are using it as a way of curtailing the rights of others, not only others who intend to participate or compete against them, but even the citizens themselves to participate in public affairs. Because the participation of a citizen in public affairs is a human right. The right to associate, the right to assemble, the right to free speech. There is actually a general comment 34 that recently came out of the UN Human Rights Committee that discusses these issues. You cannot conscript the free will of the people using public health.
Reports of overzealous African security forces killing or harassing people as they enforce COVID-19 measures are in many ways unwelcome developments. Ugandan book publisher John Bosco Kasaja weighs in.
What is happening is, you know, it makes you shed tears. You know, you can really shed tears when you hear these stories. A pregnant woman is pushed off a moving motorcycle. She falls down. Can you imagine the pain she goes through? Can you imagine, even if she survives, she doesn't die? How much money is going to be spent on this woman? We are in a situation where there's no work, you know? These things, most of these things used to happen when there was a total lockdown. Someone could not go to do anything. Someone could not look for money. So the little you have, or the little you have from a friend, a relative, you have to spend it on this sick woman who has been pushed off moving by the motorcycle. the condition worsens. She gets sicker. Of course, the violence, this is also experienced in Kenya. It is experienced in Nigeria. It's experienced in, it has spread in so many areas, so many places, other countries, everywhere, and it's uncalled for. We don't need this violence.
In the event of further lockdowns on the continent, if spikes in infections occur, African security forces owe it to themselves to adopt smarter responses so that violations of people's rights are avoided. Wanyemera agrees.
The only way the likelihood of abuse, discriminatory policing is achieved is by you training a proper professional independent police.
Security forces in Africa with a reputation of brutality have to re-examine their responses. The UN has warned that heavy-handed security responses can likely raise the specter of not only mistrust but also insecurity. Thank you for plugging into this last part of this New Vision podcast series. You can find more podcasts on my blog at www.masabachronicle.co.uk.